Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 6, The Killing of the Demon Putana, text number 42. Nope, purport, so I'll just read the translation. When the inhabitants of Braj, who had come from distant places, heard the whole story of how Putana had come and then been killed by Krishna, they were astonished, and they offered their blessings to the child for his wonderful deed of killing Putana. Nanda Maharaj, of course, was very much obliged to Vasudeva, who had foreseen the incident and simply thanked him, thinking how wonderful Vasudeva was. So here's a little baby, some months old, and here's a witch who's 27 kilometers long, and Krishna just killed her. And they still think he's a little baby. That's called Yogamaya. So Yogamaya is bewildering, and we can appreciate Yogamaya because although we've heard so many times that we're not this body, still we don't take it very seriously. So although we've seen Krishna, although the inhabitants of Braj have seen this huge demon was killed by Krishna as a little baby, still they don't take it really seriously. That's the power of Yogamaya, either acting as Mahamaya or the internal energy. So text 43. Nanda Saputram Adaya Pradya Gatam Udaradi Murdya Yupa Griraya Paramam Mudam Lebe Kuru Dvaha. Nanda Maharaj Nanda Saputram Adaya, taking his son Krishna on his lap, Pretya Agatam, as if Krishna had returned from death. No one could even imagine that from such a danger a child could be saved. Udaradi, because he was always liberal and simple. Murdni, on the head of Krishna. Upagraya, formerly smelling. Paramam, highest. Mudam, peace. Lebe, achieved. Kuru Udvaha, Maharaj Prikshit. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Prikshit, best of the Kurus, Nanda Maharaj was very liberal and simple. He immediately took his son Krishna on his lap, as if Krishna had returned from death, and by formally smelling his son's head, Nanda Maharaj undoubtedly enjoyed transcendental bliss. Purport. Nanda Maharaj could not understand how the inhabitants of his house had allowed Putana to enter the house, nor could he imagine the gravity of the situation. He did not understand that Krishna had wanted to kill Putana and that his pastimes were performed by Yogamaya. Nanda Maharaj simply thought that someone had entered his house, created havoc. This was Nanda Maharaj's simplicity. Text 47, 44. Any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda, the Supreme Original Person. Purport. The incident in which the great witch attempted to kill the child but was killed herself is certainly wonderful. Therefore, this verse uses the word adbhutam, meaning specifically wonderful. Krishna has left us many wonderful narrations about him. Simply by reading these narrations as they're described in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment to and devotion for Govinda, Adi Purusha. As in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, titled The Killing of the Demon Putana. There are three levels of devotees, the Kanishta Adhikari, the Madhyama Adhikari, and the Uttama Adhikari in terms of faith. Kanishta simply means beginning, Uttama middle, and Uttama means the topmost. So there's also Kanishta according to eligibility for devotional service, as explained in the second chapter of the Nectar of Devotion. But that eligibility for devotional service, from Kanishta to Madhyam to Uttama, simply brings one to the platform of liberation or Nishta. But here we can examine things from the point of view of Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in the Krishna book, Prabhupada explains that for the neophyte devotee, neophyte means materialistic. Materialistic means we still think ourselves to be this body. To more extent than we don't. Even on the platform when one comes to Nishta, then at least there's a point, a tipping stone, when one identifies oneself more as a soul than as a body. One is not liberated, one is not completely an artha nivritti, but at least one is sufficiently that one doesn't take material existence as seriously as one takes spiritual existence. And even at the point of liberation, when one actually identifies oneself as a soul, but doesn't quite know one's spiritual identity, still, at that point, it is not clear, 100% clear, what one's spiritual identity is, and therefore one is not completely on the spiritual platform. Just like there's a difference between knowing what we're not, which is liberation from material concept, to knowing who we actually are, which is at the platform of bhava and prema. So Prabhupada said, for a neophyte, if they hear, neophyte means those who are still in the material conception of life, if they hear about Krishna's pastimes, especially with the gopis, which we're not quite up to yet, then they may take it as some kind of nice past relationship between Krishna, he is a young boy, and these girls, young girls. But if they hear from the right source and they have the right attitude, then they'll actually get some happiness from it and not be misled that this is something mundane. On the other hand, those who are on the Madhyama Adhikari platform, the middle platform, hearing these pastimes, then they become more enlightening and encouraging. And for those who are on the Uttama Adhikari platform, when they hear the pastimes, they're actually there in the pastime. And sometimes on the highest level, they're participating in the pastime in some way, in their spiritual identity. Now we could try to imitate the Uttama Adhikari platform, which would be a waste of time, and it would send us to the deepest regions of the lowest platform. We could try to act on the Madhyama Adhikari platform, and try to appreciate. So that's what these classes are for, to give a little bit more insight than that this is simply a nice story. Or we could just hear the stories, and as says here, try to hear them with some faith and with devotion. That this is not just some ordinary storybook. So that's also very nice. In any case, in our platform, for the most of us, we should try to hear the stories and try to understand how it fits into our lives. Now, Krishna's stories are the same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's stories, the Chaitanya Lila. The difference is, in Chaitanya Lila, there's the added flavor of acting on the Madhyama Adhikari platform, which is the platform we're trying to act on, namely to learn how to relate, to reciprocate loving exchanges with the devotees by chanting together and taking prasadam together and discussing Krishna together. So this is the sadhu sangha part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, which lead to Sharanagati. Sharanagati means the progressive development of surrender to Krishna. If we take pleasure in devotee association concerning Krishna, then we want to go deeper into it. That's called Sharanagati. This becoming more and more surrendered to Krishna. And Sharanagati means accepting everything favorable, giving up everything unfavorable, developing the experience that Krishna will maintain us and protect us, having no interest outside of Krishna's interest, and always remaining meek and humble. So from there, one becomes enthusiastic about constantly rendering service, because it's by rendering service that we can constantly develop our Krishna consciousness. Bhakti mam avijananti. Service doesn't mean just to be doing things, but doing things in Krishna consciousness. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavatamati kriyatam katopi labhyate. Doing things in the mood of devotion to try to please Krishna, to do it with care and attention, to do it consistently, with some enthusiasm. These are the development of service attitude. And no one can develop a service attitude unless one takes pleasure in the service. Some services we may not like, but if we do it with devotion to Krishna, to please Krishna, then gradually what will happen is our consciousness changes, and therefore we'll be more attached to the level to the Krishna consciousness than we will be to any particular service. But in the beginning, we have two tendencies. And those tendencies are best utilized, which we're accustomed to. For many lifetimes, we've developed tendencies, we've had experience, we have inclinations, and those are best utilized as offerings to Krishna, because that's what we're attached to, that's what we've developed, that's what we're most interested in. And we offer that to Krishna. It's more natural. And try to do something completely new, and then we'll struggle to figure out what to do it, more than struggle to do it for Krishna. And if there's some experience of happiness and joy and enlightenment steadily in Krishna consciousness, then we have something to give to others. Because we have something to give to others, Prabhupada has made it very simple, that if we have enough faith and that these books have something valuable, rather than some kind of ancient story from India, we actually have some faith that these can help people, then we can, with some conviction, we can go out and distribute them. Even though we may not understand them so deeply, but if we try to distribute them, then Krishna will reciprocate with us and give us some experience that, yes, you're doing the right thing. Because Krishna is conscious of everything, everywhere, at all time. And then if we do the right thing, then Krishna will reciprocate and encourage us. And obviously, if we go out and preach outreach to others, we are not necessarily so advanced in consciousness that we can tell them right on the street, take them through the whole process of understanding that they're not their body, the Krishna Prema, on the streets of Ljubljana in 15 minutes. Nor should we try to do that, because people we won't be able to do anything beneficial for people if we try to do that. We have to meet people where they're at, near where we think they should be. And that goes for everyone. Generally speaking, if we practice outreach and following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, Prabodhananda Saraswati has said, that we should approach people with a straw between our teeth. Not literally. People would find it rather strange. That I heard you people are vegetarians, but I thought you... It's good to see that you're on a raw diet, but I don't know if I could follow that same diet you're on. Here's a cookbook, how to eat raw straw. No, with a straw between the teeth is a symptom of humility in the Vedic culture. It's an attitude, actually. Now, of course, we think, many times we go on the street, we think we're the saviors. That these are rotten karmis and I'm the pure devotee. And I've come here to save you. And unless you accept my generosity and compassion, then Yamaraj is waiting for you. Because I'm your own, I'm the truth, the way, and the light. And no one gets to Krishna except through me. So that won't work very well. People are not looking for most people don't go on the street looking for their savior. They're looking for their devotee out there. Someone who will appreciate them. At least accept them for who they are. And more than that, appreciate them. So to approach people with that attitude of appreciation, acceptance and appreciation, then we can hear, then we can, eventually people will accept that we're their friends. And then they might inquire from us and take the book, which is an inquiry, to find out what's in the book. What has created such a nice person that they're my devotee, they appreciate me, there must be something valuable in the book that has enlightened them to come to the platform of appreciating my good qualities. That even my mother has a hard time. This person does. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are full of devotee association and service to Krishna, as well as elevation towards different stages of Krishna consciousness and service, and ultimately going out and helping others go through the process too. But Krishna Lila is full of Mahabhagavats, devotees who are living on the spiritual platform with Krishna, and some demons to come to make things more interesting. To fulfill Krishna's pastimes in the material world, because in the spiritual world there are no demons, but there are rumors of demons. And because there are rumors of demons in the spiritual world, therefore it makes devotees more attached to Krishna. They have the feeling, at least, that Krishna is in trouble and they have to protect him. But if they did that here in the material world, probably they get all locked up in the insane asylum. They have to have real demons here, so-called, in order to fulfill the goal in the pastime, to help the devotees become more attached to Krishna by feeling himself to be in difficulty, and for at least vatsalya rasa, parental rasa, that they're going to protect Krishna. So that's necessary here, and it's necessary also for us to hear that if these big, big demons are opposed to Krishna and they get defeated, what to speak of us, who are little demons? When we defy Krishna, what do we expect? Of course, we're not just demons, we're also aspiring devotees at the same time. So we're like in the middle. We can see how nice it is when one surrenders to Krishna and tries to serve him, and we can see how it's not so nice when we oppose him. So we see both sides in these pastimes. So both Krishna Lila and Chaitanya Lila, they're both helpful for us. Therefore it says that without accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if one accepts him as an ordinary person, but is more attached to Chaitanya Lila, or if one is attached to Krishna Lila and disregards Chaitanya Lila in this age, then one is to be known as a asura, a demon. Which is a pretty heavy statement. Because it includes a lot of people we think are quite elevated as demons. But anyhow, there are different levels of demons too. And demon means that one just doesn't really understand who they are or what to do. In order to actually become elevated. And the problem with that is that asura, that one will not actually follow the scripture properly. And therefore one will gradually get degraded. Especially in Kali Yuga, our only hope is not only Krishna Lila, but it's also Chaitanya Lila. Chaitanya Lila is not different, because Chaitanya Lila, Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees are just talking about Krishna. They're talking about these pastimes. They're not necessarily, as we can see, even in the Krishna Lila, the gopi's relation with Krishna. That's not what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is interested in. He was reading more, at least externally, he liked to read again and again and again Prahlad Maharaj's pastimes and Dhruva Maharaj's pastimes. Because these are pastimes that especially help us understand what it means to become Krishna conscious. The difficulties one may have to undergo in the process, especially in Kali Yuga, if we expect it's going to be a one-way street. It's just going to all be, you know, glubjivins and puris. We're wrong. We're always being attacked by our demoniac kind of mentality from our past. And we have to defeat it. We have to take shelter of Krishna like the gopis. Not by opposing our demoniac mentality. Hey, you rascal mind, I'm going to get you. Fighting with the mind means that the mind will undoubtedly defeat us, because it's much more expert in fight than we are. Only when we take shelter of Krishna can we actually defeat this untamable mind. So that's Krishna Lila, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Lila helps us understand that in a practical way. By how to associate with devotees by chanting and hearing, etc., etc., etc. Well, in Krishna Lila, the same thing goes on, but they're just thinking about Krishna in many ways. They don't have an uncontrolled mind. They're spontaneously attracted all the time to Krishna. The gopis during the day, as we see in the 34th chapter of the Krishna book, or this Chaitanya Charitamrita, this Srimad Bhagavatam, they're always talking about Krishna, either his pastimes, playing the flute, and the denizens of heaven listening to it and becoming ecstatic, or the calves hearing the sound of Krishna's flute and becoming ecstatic, standing in ecstasy, stunned, or the demigods offering prayers, or the clouds showering flowers on Krishna. They talk about Krishna's pastimes in so many different ways during the day. They don't have to study the Bhagavatam, sit down and have class. That's all they do, is think about Krishna, because they're in love with him. But we're not so much in love with Krishna, although there's some attraction. Therefore, we need some regulation to hear regularly. Or else our minds will take over. We'll hear about other things in our minds and outside, wondering what the latest news is, how's the war going, who died from the pandemic. So many things will attract us. And therefore we should also see these things in relation to Krishna, but that's only possible from Bhagavad Gita, not from the 10th canto. Because here we find even the biggest demons that are imaginable come to attack Krishna, but they don't take it very seriously. At least we find Nanda Maharaj so simple and so devotional, so much in love with Krishna, He's just happy that Krishna is safe, that's all. He doesn't get into a whole investigation, finding out, did this witch come from the Illuminati? Where did the witch come from? Let's have him do an investigation, get to the bottom of this. No, Nanda Maharaj is just happy Krishna is safe, and that Vasudev, he's amazed that he could actually foretell this, etc. And then they go on with their life, herding the cows, serving Krishna, rather than going to Mathura and seeking out, doing an investigation. But for us, these things are necessary. But for them, they're on a different platform of experience. So we should appreciate it, what's applicable, that these are the Mahabhagavats, these are the persons who example should inspire us, that when we come to that platform of Krishna consciousness, many of the things we worry about and are concerned about will just go away. And if we're not, these things are not going away, it's very unlikely we're making very much advancement in Krishna consciousness. We're too much concerned with things other than Krishna. On the other hand, there's things we should be concerned about. That we shouldn't deny that, why am I concerned about this? I should be more advanced. I just ignore it. No, in worldly dealings and nectar of devotion, we should be concerned about certain things, but we should be concerned about them in relation to our service to Krishna, and then gradually Krishna will override these unnecessary concerns that we have. In any case, we can learn from Krishna book, and we need Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavad Gita and other books to have a full understanding of what our path to Krishna is, so that we can gradually make some progress. Participate in Chaitanya Leela in this world, and at the same time develop the pure mentality that Nanda Maharaj and the residents of Vrindavan have, so that we're always thinking about Krishna in any circumstance. That Krishna is the topmost in our mind, and everything else is secondary. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes. No, go ahead. Okay.
Thank you. Is everything we're doing for Krishna transcendental, or are we doing under the influence of mood?
Depends where our consciousness is. Everything already is spiritual, and the more we do things to please Krishna properly in Krishna consciousness, that is, the more we understand what our duty is, and we do it to please Krishna, then the more everything becomes spiritualized. And the more things become spiritualized, then the higher our consciousness is, then the less we're influenced by any mode of nature, including goodness. But so we're trying to at least do things in goodness and bring things in our consciousness focusing on Krishna. And the more we do that, then the more we transcend the modes of nature. If we're not thinking about Krishna while we're doing the service, at least we should think about doing it for Krishna. And that will lead to thinking about Krishna, which will lead to transcending the modes of nature. But if we think about doing things to please Krishna, and we do it with care and attention, then at least we'll be doing it in the mode of goodness, and then eventually we'll become more and more conscious of Krishna while we're doing it. Krishna will reveal himself to us. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. Sometime back in some lecture, mentioned about the minimum qualification for one to go back to the spiritual world is the Krishna Seva. And one has to be on the platform of Bhava to be at least to be able to enter one of the material planets where Krishna's pastimes are going on. So I was just thinking that if one is not even on the platform of Bhava, then what about that person? Like he just
No, he comes back to, he goes to another place to perform service. I mean, there are so many varieties of devotees. so many different levels of consciousness, so many different destinations. But Pariksha Maharaj prayed to the sages that at least he was hoping that if he couldn't go back to the spiritual world, that at least he could take birth amongst devotees again and continue on with his devotional service. So that should, he's a Mahabhagavat, but that should be our prayer too. That even if I don't become perfect in this lifetime, please let me take birth amongst devotees so I can continue on with my devotional service in the next lifetime. Now, we find that even Jad Bharat, formerly Bharat Maharaj, became a deer, and then Jad Bharat, he wasn't perfect, but he was perfect enough that he took birth in a nice family. His father was a pure Brahmin. But he wasn't even interested in that. He was so advanced that he just concentrated on his spiritual advancement in spite of whatever circumstances he was under, so he could actually become a perfect devotee of Krishna. So there's an example of someone who was almost perfect, but didn't quite make it, so there still he had to come back and make more advancements, so he did become perfect in that lifetime. You have a good one, pass the microphone back.
You mentioned that in the beginning we do services according to our inclination. I want to ask, what happens when we get that attitude from other devotees that our service is not enough? Like, for example, you sing for arati, but I'm actually doing arati. Or you're cleaning, but I'm cooking. You're doing garlands, but I'm distributing books. What should we do when other devotees consider our service to be lesser or even useless?
Become humble.
Or should we continue to do it, or should we try to...
Well, it depends who gave you the service. You know, if the service is authorized by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, what do we care what anyone else thinks? We care what Krishna thinks. But if someone says you're insignificant, they're completely correct. We're only 1/10,000th the size of Tipperary in size.
It's not about us being insignificant, it's about the service being insignificant.
Even our service is insignificant. Krishna has millions and trillions of cowherd boys and mothers in Goloka Vrindavan. What is our service? Our making little fruity halava or something. Do you think Krishna is depending on us?
But I thought that any service we do for Krishna, they are on the same level. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yes, it is. And Krishna appreciates it. He appreciates it unlimitedly. But we should be humble. We should understand that we're just one of the unlimited servants of Krishna. And we all have the same goal, is to try to please Krishna. Now, if someone comes along and criticizes us, we should take them as our friend to help us become humble. Because it's the humility that Krishna loves. It's the basic principle of love is humility. We can't develop our love unless we become humble. Unless we understand how wonderful Krishna is and how wonderful his devotees are, we can't really develop our love adequately. So if someone comes along, we have to learn to not only humility, but also tolerance. And appreciate that this devotee is helping me become humble and tolerant, which will lead to my perfection in life. Otherwise, if no one criticized us, everyone thought we were great, and everything we do was wonderful, we'd never make any spiritual advancement. We'd always be stuck in the same level, eternally. Or we may even become degraded if we're doing the wrong thing. People are praising us for the wrong thing, we'll get into trouble. But when people criticize us, we have to become introspective and be confirmed that I'm doing the right thing, but always feel meek and humble, that actually what is my greatness anyhow? I'm only a very tiny servant. Whatever service I'm doing is by the grace of Guru and Krishna, and I'm just doing the best I can, but it's not a wonderful service. I'm just trying to do something the best I can because that's my nature. I want to please Krishna. And I'm just doing it as best I can, that's all, to please him. And if Krishna accepts it, then that's wonderful. He's so kind.
Thank you.
Therefore, Krishna arranges, even in Goloka Vrindavan, the demons come. And therefore, they have to take shelter of Krishna. It's not that everything is... Everyone who comes to Vrindavan says, hey, this is a wonderful place. I love everyone here. I think I'll become a devotee. Where do I join? No, the demons come. And they don't even like Krishna, what to speak of his devotees. If you met Trinavarta, you say, how's my service going? You're going, this is terrible what you're doing. What would you say? What, maybe I should give it up. Give a whirl with Trinavarta somewhere. No, we understand that this is Krishna's arrangement to make, you know, to make me take shelter of him more. Is that right?
I'm not really. I don't think I understand. My question was not related about us being appreciated or not, or criticized for the service that we do, but about some services. Let's take the devotees, the person who are doing out of the picture. Are there services that are lesser or useless to do, that are not
useless to do?
As others?
Depends on our consciousness. But as far as things that, what the mission is to spread Krishna consciousness. So everyone should feel themselves to be an assistant of that mission. And anything that's assisting the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness is equally valuable. Just like in the body, you have the hands and legs and arms and the head. They're all equally valuable in the service. It's not that I don't really need the arms, or I don't need the legs, or I don't need the head or the stomach. All I need is the head.
How do we know which are the services that are assisting in the mission and the ones that are not?
How do we know? Therefore, we need intelligent devotees to know what's assisting or not. Generally speaking, Prabhupada has emphasized certain things to make it clearer that this mission is a cultural revolution to convince people that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's our mission. And anything that helps to do that is part of the mission, whether it be through art, or through music, through dance, through culture. It's a cultural revolution spearheaded by distribution of transcendental literature. So the art, the music, the chanting, the artwork about, these are all part of the cultural revolution. So if we're taking part in the cultural revolution, we're helping prepare nice prasadam, nice garlands for Krishna, decorate the deity nicely. This is all part of art and music and culture, the culture of the transcendental world. So if we're participating in that, that's perfect.
Thank you.
Anything else? Khala Grandaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.